From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1862 when the Secretary of the U.S. Treasury was given the task of choosing which faces to put on American currency. There was only one rule. Each honoree had to be dead. Washington on the one, sure, made sense. Eventually, the decision for the $20 bill landed on Andrew Jackson in 1928. Grover Cleveland had been on the bill, and it's not clear why Jackson was chosen to replace him. The Treasury doesn't have to say. Andrew Jackson seemed like an odd match even from the beginning. His legacy includes forging the so-called Trail of Tears, including remarkably racist views about Native Americans. And Jackson hated paper currency anyway. He was a solid gold kind of a guy. But here we are with Andrew Jackson on the 20. And now the Treasury says a woman will finally grace an American bill. Surely one of our most racist presidents will be removed, right? After all, the grassroots movement pushing a woman on the 20 has gained steam. But nope. In 2020, a woman's face will appear on the $10 bill instead. Which woman? We don't know yet. Okay, so that feels like a small step of progress, even if it's not what the movement wanted. And I noticed something else this week, another kind of one step forward, two steps back for women kind of thing. The Women's World Cup has been gripping drama. The Americans set to play Japan in the final on Sunday. The quality of play on the field has been phenomenal. So what is the real reason for the massive increase in television viewership and interest? Well, the women's coordinator for the Brazilian Football Confederation has what he says is the answer. Marco Aurelio Cunha says, female soccer players are finally wearing more makeup, looking beautiful. Here's his actual quote. Quote, now they go onto the field in an elegant manner. We used to dress the girls as boys, so the team lacked a spirit of elegance, femininity. Now the shorts are a bit shorter. The hairstyles are more done up. It's not a woman dressed as a man. End quote. This surely makes the deposed former scam artist leader of FIFA happy. Sepp Blatter once said that female soccer players could stand to wear tighter shorts. So for anyone who proudly proclaims that we don't need feminism because equality is here, already achieved, think about these developments this week. Let's talk about all of that and more this hour with my guest for the hour, Deborah Hughes, the executive director of the Susan B. Anthony House and Museum. Nice to have you, Deborah.
Good to be here, Evan.
Barbara Lee Savoy is here, a women's studies professor at SUNY Brockport, and great to have you, Barbara.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And Haley Johnson's here, a local grad student who is working on specialized media presentations about women's body image. Nice to have you, Haley.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, obviously, Haley, it's the tighter shorts and the makeup, right? That's why we're
clearly watching
the Women's World Cup. Is that, you agree with that, I assume?
Well, so you know what I did recently? I looked at a bunch of articles concerning this issue, and I Googled female soccer players. The first few to come up, actually the majority of them, were lists of like the top 10 hottest female soccer players. So they list the word beautiful prior to the word successful. So you see that disparity there.
It's interesting. So you do that Google search, and it gives you the suggested or the popular searches.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, off the bat, I think we can all agree how ridiculous these comments are. But Brazil is one of the soccer powers of the world in both men and women's soccer. And Barbara Lee Savoy, I still find it troubling. I'm not the kind of person who can look at that and say, well, that's Brazil. Hey, we've got real equality here. I'm very much troubled by that. Are you?
Yeah, well, I think, we can go back to Title IX, which, you know, was really legislation that was designed for correcting women's equality in sport. But I think, you know, we continue to get less capital, less seriousness attached to that. And I also think the comment that Andrew Benoit made on Sports Illustrated,
yes,
the tweet, is along those lines when he said, you know, watching women's soccer is boring, and then, you know, self-corrected and said, well, actually, watching all women's sports is boring. And so I think those kind of undercuts, those like little comments that fall off the radar but are enough, really capture an ideology where we're still fighting the same fights, in the same struggle that we were decades ago.
Deborah Hughes, I've been watching the Women's World Cup, and I've just been marveling at the quality of the play. The length of the shorts has actually not even come up to me until this Brazilian soccer head mentioned it. What do you think?
I was in a mixed group, a promiscuous assembly, as they used to call it, of men and women watching the match together. And I think the men were about half the age of most of the women who were watching. The moment that came to mind when you were talking about shorts for me was actually when the German player and the American player leapt and collided heads and knocked each other out, where the German player actually got stitches on the field or staples.
Yeah.
That's the drama that had people engaged. I didn't hear a single person mention anything about shorts, makeup, or attractiveness.
Sorry.
Well, we're going to get to some of your remarks and comments throughout the hour, and you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. Maybe you disagree. We'd be happy to hear from you. Maybe you agree. I want to know what you think about what we've been hearing and seeing. Now, I think happily, most of the attention of the World Cup and most of the people watching would ardently disagree with these rather ridiculous comments. Sepp Blatter going back years, and now the Brazilian Women's Confederation head talking about these issues, but but nonetheless, we're still having to deal with that. So if you want to join the conversation, you can do that. You can find me on Twitter at Evan Dawson. A lot of you grumbling already about those remarks. But I also want to touch on a little bit of history here, because a lot of people said when they heard that a woman was going to be on a dollar bill, they thought it was going to be the 20 because there's been this movement. Mm-hmm. Deborah Hughes, update us on, first of all, the idea of a woman on the 20 and your thoughts about where we're going next with this.
I think the 20 was a great idea. The design's supposed to be announced in 2020. That's the 100-year celebration of women getting the right to vote. You know, the 19th Amendment, sometimes called the Susan B. Anthony Amendment. Susan B. Anthony made it onto the coin, but that was about the time that coins fell out of use, the dollar. So it makes a lot of sense to do the 20. The 20 happens to be the most circulated bill. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to catch up in time, another piece is people don't realize that most of the U.S. currency actually circulates outside the United States. Mm-hmm. So our bills tell the world who we are and what we think. And I would like for our bills to demonstrate someone who represents democracy well. I don't think Andrew Jackson's the best choice.
Barbara Lee Savoy, are you surprised in 2015 we've still got Andrew Jackson on any of our bills?
Well, I am surprised at that, and I'm even more surprised at how latent it is in trying to push this forward in terms of changing the currency and getting a woman on, you know, both coins and paper money. And just looking at a little bit of background on that, the currency that we do change is very much caught up in trying to prevent any kind of misuse. So it's about, let's make sure we create bills that we can't counterfeit. Mm-hmm. So it seems because of that, the process of trying to even change who is on it, on our paper currency is very, very slow and difficult. So I am surprised that they did not go with the 20, but what I read was the reason was they chose the $10 bill because that was the one that was up for updating in terms of its currency protection.
It was already due to be updated.
Okay.
So this, right. This is not a case of the Treasury or the American government saying it's about time.
Yeah, yeah,
this
exactly.
is them saying, well, we've got to update it.
So it was
anyway.
An opportune time yeah. for them to do it. So I think the second thing is, I think it's ridiculous that they're now saying that Alexander Hamilton will not leave the bill, but he will be on the back side of it. So that if we do introduce, and we are going to introduce a woman on the dollar bill, that she'll have an escort. So I think that's kind of a really silly thing. Additionally, that makes me think then we should be putting a woman on every single bill. Every single paper currency should have a bill. If we're not removing anyone, if we're keeping these individuals that have claimed their space, then let's underside that and not just ask for one woman, but go to every single bill and every piece of coins, mm-hmm. the coin currency. So I think the whole process from the 20 to the 10 has now, I think, opened a Pandora's box. It says that we should be doing a lot more than just saying, this is great that we now have, you know, one bill that's identified, no longer the 20, which would have been the best place. And I agree with Deborah because of it's a more prominent bill that's used in circulation. But now we've arrived back to the 10 and we've kind of settled on the fact that it's not just going to be, you know, a woman by herself.
You know, with the speed of with which this country responded to the Confederate flag. And again, I know that we can spend an hour just talking about the fact that we've been a little overly self-congratulatory that we're finally ditching the Confederate flag in 2015. I mean, there have been no secrets about what the Confederate flag is for years. But all that set aside, there has been a real speed with which that issue has moved.
I agree.
And I wonder now with Americans saying, okay, that is a symbol. Symbols matter. And the notion of, well, it's part of our history. Sure, it's part of our history. That's what museums are for. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you use a symbol, you fly it over a state house, or you put it on currency. I wonder, Barbara, if eventually the Andrew Jackson thing goes in that direction. I'm not saying he is a Confederate flag. I don't know how different it is. I mean, he's one of the most racist presidents we had.
Exactly.
Eventually, does it go that way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the potentiality. So I think that, you know, introduces a note of optimism. So I hear your point. I do think that I want to go back to, it's something that Deborah mentioned earlier, this notion of these bills are in circulation. Maybe they're more prominent outside the country. So it does expose an image of who's important in the United States. So that carries symbolic magnitude. So in that sense, I think it's really important that we ask these really critical questions of who are the individuals, the icons, that are representative of our country. And so even more so, then we say, yes, we've got to kind of be more diligent about these missteps. So the Andrew Jackson one is, you know, a good point. And then let's get, you know, more women that are visible so that young girls and boys growing up do have good symbols and do have good, you know, people that they can turn to. I will, you know, want to ask back, the process is so long and so laden. Yesterday, Chuck Schumer was in Seneca Falls, and he was very excited about the fact that he wants to have a bunch of town meetings, and the town meetings will be for people to come together and vote on who the individual will be. And
The $10 bill.
On the $10 bill. And the more I start seeing these processes, and, you know, it sounds so great, you know, we're going to invite you all in, we're going to have these meetings, we're going to talk about this, and I can't help but feel like a little bit of, there's a little bit of, you know, condescension to say that, you know, now we're talking to you, now we're getting your point of view, and it's still a bunch of men that are trying to make these decisions by taking these little pieces of information from everyone. It's good to, you know, democracy to do that, but we're still kind of subverting ourselves to the process, and the process also is quite long and bureaucratically thick. So you mentioned the Confederate flag and how quickly we responded to that. It seems that we could do a better job in trying to speed up this process of getting updating our currency. And I say that because we're well equipped, very modern country. We handle a lot of things, you know, in ways that, you know, we have skill and technology at our disposal. So let's kind of step forward a little bit, step up to the mat and try and get things moving a little bit faster.
Yeah, and you might have heard Barbara just mention that Alexander Hamilton will remain on the $10 bill on the back of it. I want to play some of the comments from one of my favorite comedians taking on this question. This is Jessica Williams on The Daily Show, tackling the question of why Alexander Hamilton has to stay on the $10 bill, even if a Susan B. Anthony or a Harriet Tubman or any woman ends up on that bill. You're still going to have a man on that. Let's listen.
Oh, seriously? So the ladies' bill has a chaperone? We'll put you on the 10, ladies, but Alexander, go with them to make sure they don't do any impulse buys.
That's... I know, I didn't see that's unfair. I didn't see it, but come on. Here's what you have to admit. You have to admit this to me right now. It will be pretty great seeing a woman's face on money.
Yeah, it would be great, but paper money won't even be a thing by the time it comes out. That's always how it works, John. They put our faces on things that are about to disappear. They did it with coins, stamps, and now the 10. Honestly, John, at the end of the day, I don't give a damn who's on the bill. What I do care about is getting an equal share of the bill. I'd rather have 10 full Hamilton dollars than $8.45 of ladybugs. Let's spend our time focusing on that.
It's Jessica Williams of The Daily Show riffing on some of the news on what's coming up with the 10. So if you're just joining us, yes, the U.S. Treasury saying that by 2020, they're going to put a woman's face on it. On a $10 bill, Alexander Hamilton apparently goes to the back. And Deborah Hughes, as much as that may feel like an indignity, your organization, the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House, is still saying, okay, this is a moment where we can choose a woman's face for a bill. You want it to be Susan B. Anthony. It seems like a logical choice. Mm-hmm. Is it the easy choice that you think? I mean, there are a lot of good candidates, but what do you think?
I think the question about what does the symbol represent? And if... as the Secretary of Treasury has said, they want this to be a symbol for democracy. Susan B. Anthony's a great candidate. She engaged in civil disobedience. She engaged in petitions on a state level and a local level. She was a phenomenal community organizer. She actually went to jail for her movement and her act of civil disobedience of voting. She pushed for a constitutional amendment. We nicknamed one after her. She spent 54 years doing it. I think... as a person, she passionately believed in democracy at its best, but she also felt that democracy was something we had to always work at. And I think that would be, to me, the most important piece about having Susan B. Anthony on it. It's not the great, did a good job, put her on a bill to reward her. She said, when I'm gone, keep on with the work. So if this discussion, when we're having town hall meetings, is really about what are the symbols that are important? Mm-hmm. Where do we use symbols inappropriately? What can we do constructively about this? What is our vision for democracy? I think we are a country that is revisiting some of our most profound ideals and beliefs right now. And that discussion, Susan, I would like to think Susan B. Anthony would be thrilled that we're having that discussion as a part of this process.
We're going to get to your phone calls in a moment here, but who else is on the list for you? I mean, what are, you know, there are some obvious choices, but Susan B. Anthony, of course, is at the top, but who else is on the list?
Harriet Tubman would be way up on my list, another person who dedicated her whole life, which is different from a moment in time. I think Rosa Parks is a symbol and did a lot more than we recognize, but is more connected with a moment than a whole movement and an engagement. I think that Ida B. Wells would be a great choice. You know, Ida B. Wells' work in the Reconstruction era of exposing how giving black men the vote in with the 15th Amendment didn't accomplish what was supposed to happen and all the repercussions of that, I think that her story can open up a whole new discussion on a lot of levels. I think there, I'd have a whole bunch of candidates. And that's what I don't like about the town hall meetings. Why is it that we have to decide and one woman wins and everybody else's woman doesn't?
And
are you kidding?
you've got your woman now on the bill, so...
So we're done.
Everyone so calm down. Yeah.
And a bunch of other women weren't as important, weren't as significant, weren't as unbelievably profound and don't need to have their stories told?
It is fascinating in that we've arrived at that point. And so, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't just be one. And I don't say that as someone who's pandering to a movement. I mean, it's just sort of obvious here. I mean, there's a lot of tremendous candidates and current faces on the bills who should stay on the bills. There's some great men throughout history. There's some great women throughout history. It shouldn't just be one man. It shouldn't just be one woman. And it is strange. But some of the candidates that you just heard Deborah mentioned, Barbara, you were nodding. Who else is on that list for you?
Yeah, I mean, Ida B. Wells is really at the top of my list, particularly in the current social context and some of the tensions around race and other categories of identity. And she was just a champion of anti-lynching campaigns. She was courageous. She really took up a movement around empower all women, not only women of her race. Related to Ida B. Wells, I'd also throw out Mary Church Terrell, who was a wonderful crusader, African-American crusader, who took up the challenge of lifting up everyone, women and men and her race, through education. So and when we think about what are the symbols that we want this to convey, I think those two individuals are probably at the top of my list. But I do have a lot of allegiance to Susan B. You know, we're in Rochester, and clearly, you know, as Deborah said, she's someone who's taken up a movement, not someone who's been in the moment. And then, you know, when I think about the notion of it's money, it's currency, we're using this for exchange, and I think that's something that also resonates with Susan B., who, you know, wanting everyone to have a purse of your own. And I think about some of the theorists behind that. Virginia Woolf, you need a guinea and a lock. And it was about, you know, women having the money to be able to establish their own independence. So, you know, but I do want to echo back to you, Evan, and also to Deborah's words. And I think the challenge becomes that, you know, this becomes somewhat constrained and it starts to feel a little icky for me when we have to start, you know, choosing and selecting and, you know, talking to the people that are going to control it. So, you know, this notion of who are we empowering and who really has a voice becomes, you know, back to the center of there's a lot of constrictions here.
Yeah. Well, let's ask the next generation. Haley Johnson, who would you have on that bill?
So I really like the idea of having a woman of color on the bill, just because I think what increases that notion of democracy is facilitating discussions related to intersectionality. So, like, you can't talk about race without talking about gender and vice versa. So I think having a woman of color on the bill, like Harriet Tubman or Rosa Parks, would encourage us to have those discussions.
But you're in Rochester, so you better start with Susan B.
Yes, yes.
Let me grab our first phone call. Mike in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I called on the woman in sports, and then you guys got me flopping and flipping here. The thing about the bill, I mean, why don't we educate in history class? And I'm a student of history that says, why don't we learn about the women in the history books? I'm not against them being placed on a bill, but are we going to get to the point now where we give up a Harriet Tubman for change of a Lincoln and a couple of Washingtons? And, you know, I can tell you that I have repeatedly over the years question people who's on what bill, and they don't know. They simply don't know.
Yeah,
I
don't think that's true for everybody.
You're not going to teach a history lesson by doing this and placing somebody. I think there's far too much emphasis on who's on the bill. I mean, if you want to project the talents of these wonderful women that did so much, teach it in the history books, because it's not going to happen in putting on their portrait on a bill.
Okay, so I think that is a very interesting comment. We'll tackle that in a moment. But you also wanted to weigh in on the sporting question, and I'd like you to
right.
do that. Go ahead.
And Evan, here's the point. You know, having daughters, and you know, I went to other sporting events. There's just something that happens on the professional level. I mean, I watched the WNBA. It's just not as engrossing to me to watch women shoot and play sports as it is to watch the top caliber men. I don't know if it's that they're faster or whatever the thing is. I love watching, you know, when my daughters are playing against good competition, it all made sense. But I think there is a changeover. I think what happened in sports, and this is just me, but when, and help me with the name, what was it when the women won the World Cup and Brandi Chastain. She goes sliding against the ground, tears off her shirt, and she's in her sports bra. Guys took notice. And right or wrong, I think that changed everything that day.
You're saying when she tore her shirt off in celebration.
Right, like a man might do in sports, right?
You're saying
they'll take their shirts off and run around bare-chested. Well,
but you think I'm just trying to make sure I understand, Mike. Are you saying that actually sexualized it or in some way?
Oh, I'll say that, absolutely.
Okay, I don't think Brandi Chastain and maybe Caitlin, our excellent intern, see if she's commented on that over the years, because I'm sure she has. I mean, Mike's probably not the first person to bring it up. Haley, did that sexualize that moment to you?
I don't think that she meant to sexualize it. I think that we as a society who are like people who are prone to over-sexualizing people rather than focusing on their athleticism or whatnot, mm-hmm. I think that we're doing that. I don't think she's meaning to do that. And I also think that those comments, while there are some good points, they're kind of more focusing on, you know, the traditional femininity of the female soccer players. That is what was mentioned in those articles that I was discussing before, those top 10 hottest female soccer players or whatnot. They're not focusing on the athleticism. They're not focusing on the success and the talent of the women over their traditional feminine beauty.
Mm-hmm. Barbara?
Yeah, I think it's all about the social construction of the way we're reading women and men. So, you know, for those that are looking at soccer or watching a soccer game, many men will, in a celebratory, you know, throw off their shirt. So mm-hmm. it's the way we've constructed gender and the way that we're reading that I think becomes a problem. So I totally agree on my colleague's words. And I also want to mention that actually in Rochester, thanks to the top free seven, it's legal for women to walk around without their tops on. So if, you know, a woman wanted to take her top off, if we wanted to walk outside of WXXI today and just, you know, throw off our tops, we actually legally could do that. So the constructions and the way we read that become problematic. And I think women's athletics are, you know, they're as exciting, if not more exciting right now with the soccer matches going on as any male sport. Title IX, I'm just going to read this. Title IX is a law passed in 1972 that requires gender equity for boys and girls in every educational program that receives federal funding. And we're still trying to get that same kind of funding piece. And I think the ways that we're still kind of pushing at equality also push at us continuing to gender and sexualize women instead of seeing them as the athletes that they are.
And let me respond to Mike's point, because I'm a big sports fan myself, and let me respond to Mike's point about the difference in the way he sees men's and women's athletics. Women, no woman that I know of is jumping from the free throw line and dunking. There are certain things that male basketball players are doing that women generally are not or cannot do. That's okay. The women's game has a little bit better of a flow and more fundamentals to me. There are differences. I watch more men's basketball than women's. If I watch tennis, I'm way more likely to watch women's tennis than men. I find it much more exciting. Soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, I'm likely to watch both. especially at the international level. This has been a riveting World Cup. But that's okay. You may prefer men's basketball. You may prefer women's tennis. And the market may dictate that there's more commercial interest in one or the other. But that doesn't validate anything that we're hearing from a Brazilian soccer federation leader saying that, well, now they're wearing more makeup. Now the shorts are tighter, and that's what's really driving the interest. No, the interest is in raising the level of play. Listen to what English soccer, English football, there's nothing bigger in England than football, right? That's the national sport. But women's football has never been prioritized the way it finally has. Now, their national team is outstanding, and they lost in the most devastating fashion a couple of nights. Was it last night? Unbelievable fashion.
Totally.
Unbelievable. I mean, it doesn't matter what gender you're watching. That was one of the most devastating, riveting sports moments I have ever seen, and has nothing to do with makeup or the length of shorts. So yes, Mike, I get it. There are certain sports you may like to watch the men better. Maybe more sports than not you like to watch the men better. To dismiss women in sports is probably a big mistake. And the reason there is interest in this World Cup is the quality of the play, the emphasis on giving women the opportunity and seeing what they are doing with it, which is remarkable. That's all I would say about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to add to that? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on that tangent.
No. Another point I'd like to make is that we tend to separate notions of femininity from athleticism, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but sometimes that says that, oh, women who wear makeup, oh, they must not be able to lift as much weight as a man can, which isn't necessarily true. And I've gotten, this is like from like a personal standpoint, but I've gotten comments at the gym like, oh, you shouldn't lift that much, you'll get bulky, which is not at all the case. So I think that a woman's, you know, makeup or how she decides to present herself shouldn't have any, you know, that shouldn't be an issue in terms of her athletic performance.
Totally. We agree.
All right. Well, I'm late for a break, so here's what we're going to do. Let's take a short break, and we're going to come back and continue the conversation with your phone calls with our panel. Deborah Hughes is here, the executive director of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House. Barbara Lee Savoy is... I use the shorthand, Barbara. I say women and gender studies professor.
Yeah. I'm director women and gender studies at the College of Rockport.
Thank you.
You've got it.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean to shorten the title or to truncate in any way.
No, it's good.
Haley Johnson's here as well. She's a local grad student who is working on specialized media presentations regarding women's body image. And yes, we're talking about a number of threads that have been in the news this week. Your phone call is coming up next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about what the rules for memoir writing are. Maybe you enjoy reading memoirs. Have you ever asked yourself, are you okay if the author stretches the truth or at least changes some of the details for narrative or dramatic purposes? It happens more often than you might think, and the author of Eat, Pray, Love might have done exactly that with their first book. We'll tell you about some new developments there. That conversation next hour in Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Bond, Schenick & King, a full-service law firm with 11 offices serving companies, not-for-profits, municipalities, and individuals in New York State and nationally. More at bsk.com. And The Village at Unity, independent senior living that supports an active, independent lifestyle, offering hospitality, personal transportation, and other amenities. The Village at Unity, like no other. For tours, call 723-7442.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Caitlin, our intern, giving me just a little bit of information. Brandi Chastain has done countless, at this point, interviews since 1999's World Cup final in which she scored the game-winning penalty kick against China, I think. And Caitlin tells us that essentially what she talks about is in that moment she was celebrating. It was sort of an instinctive move to celebrate. It was not about sexualization. But I think Haley's point's well taken, that certain people will take a moment to sexualize just about anything. Let's grab the next phone call. Is Don in Hamlin. Go ahead, Don.
John.
Oh, John. Go ahead, John.
All right, Evan. Hey, I don't think these two names have been mentioned, but certainly Eleanor Roosevelt with her work on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Representative Jeanette Rankin, who was a pacifist and also voted against our entry into the two world wars.
Mm-hmm.
I have two daughters, and I think I've always taught them about peace. Those people have to be honored in some way. And I think the only reason why that the coins with Sacagawea and Susan B. Anthony failed is because our Treasury did a poor job about pulling the $1 bill with old George on it.
Well said. Certainly on Eleanor Roosevelt, that is a name that hadn't come up yet for the possible portrait of a woman on the $10 bill. Jeanette Rankin, Barbara Lee Savoy, you want to give us a little history lesson there? And thanks very much for the call, John. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, I mean, she was the first woman elected to Congress, injecting the, first woman's voice into national political sphere. She was a pacifist. The only member of Congress to oppose entry of the United States into both world wars. And voted against the war in Japan in 1941. So, excellent choice. And I also want to say, a word about Eleanor Roosevelt, the Declaration of, Human Rights. And I think you raise a really important point about how difficult this is, the challenge that this becomes in being placed into a corner where we must select one woman to, represent all of these symbols and ideals that are important to us and important to women's rights. So I think it speaks volumes to ways we must broaden the conversation, that we must look at really, a bigger question, not just women on the 10, but how do we redo our currency in a way, or redo our symbols in ways that women are more visible, so that these important, sheroes, I like to call them, get, visibility.
And going back to Mike's comments about currency, I appreciate the point he's making, though I disagree. He's saying, hey, a lot of people can't even tell you who's on currency. Mm-hmm. That's not going to lead to education. They should be in the history books. I think there's two separate points. Should there be a better and more thorough education of women throughout American history? Certainly, yes. Mm-hmm. But that this is where I disagree with Mike, the phone call, is that I think there is inevitably going to be, if Jeanette Rankin was on a bill, how many people in our listening audience would have said, who is Jeanette Rankin? I want to at least know. I think that does spark something.
Yeah, I want to one small comment about that. I think in relation to the fact that these are, the individuals that are on the bill right now are not people that we know about, is because they are so well known. So it's pervasive. It's almost second hat. So we're not pausing to think about who they are because they're part of the landscape. So your point, Evan, is that if we introduce these individuals into the currency, then it becomes a more intentionalized thing. So it's more apparent. We don't know them, so we're going to pause and find out about them.
Yeah, if you have forgotten who is on the $10 bill, it's because you already learned about them at some point. And if someone said, well, it's Alexander Hamilton, you would say, oh, it's Alexander Hamilton. I had forgotten, but I get it. As opposed to if it was Jeanette Rankin, you would say, wait, who is Jeanette Rankin? Mm-hmm. We should aim to get to a point where we can learn so much that we can start to forget a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it means that we've actually learned a little bit more of our history. All right, back to the phones. This is Christy in Fairport. Go ahead, Christy.
Hi there. So my husband and I were having a discussion the other night as we were watching the women's soccer game about how we feel so much more connected to the women's soccer team than we do to the men's national team, and why that might be. And, I think that, part of it is that, we have the team, the Flash here in Rochester that we can go see, who has some of the women's national team players on it. But also, I think that when our daughter was young, we really wanted her to have role models aside from skinny anorectic models to look at as a way to be. And, women who have a healthy lifestyle, who participate in sports and do things with their lives more than being housewives and, which is wonderful in and of itself. And I stayed home with my kids for a long time, and so I'm not disparaging that in any way. But just, that we can have more to look to. It's just another way to give women a vision for their future. I also think that the women's national team plays better in general than the men's national team does at this point in time.
That's certainly comparatively true.
Yeah. So, and also I think, the men just have a lot more established teams to play against, which makes it difficult to watch them. But, you know, because the women are just tremendous. They're on the top of their game internationally. Anyway.
Christy, thank you for the phone call. A lot of interesting points there. And I just want to, I'll start with the last point first, and then I'm going to kick it over to Haley to respond to some of your earlier comments. The notion of where the women's game is compared to the men's, I think we're at a very healthy point for women's international football right now because programs like England and Brazil, despite some of the sexist comments being made by the men who are running that federation, the quality of play on the field, there's more emphasis on the women's game. And over the years, there has been nowhere near parity in terms of emphasis for the women's game and the men's game. And so the Americans had a bit of a thinner field for a number of years. That's why I think if they win the World Cup title on Sunday, it will mean even more because the field has never been so deep. They just beat a fabulous Germany team that was an offensive powerhouse. So I think it's healthy where it's going, and I think it should make people even more proud of where the Americans are because they are playing great, great soccer in a tournament that is deeper than it has ever been. Haley?
Yeah, so I just wanted to respond to some of the comments about a healthy body image and having those role models for girls like Christy's daughters. She's right. We do consciously and subconsciously subscribe to these beauty standards that are, you know, relatively Eurocentric and all about women being a little bit thinner. I think you do have to be careful, though, and not generalize the role models that do exist right now, particularly with the word anorexic. It isn't an adjective, so you can't use it in that context. So you have to be...
Hold on. That's an interesting point. Anorexic, not an adjective.
It's not an adjective. No, it's a disorder, and it can't be thrown around like that as a word, which I'm sure she didn't mean to do on the phone call at all. Not at all. But, you know, she is right that we do need a bit of a healthier body image, not so much so that we need, like, a standard that is healthy, because healthy comes in all shapes and sizes. So we have to have diversity, not just for the sake of diversity, but diversity so that all girls can have somebody to look up to.
Okay. Barbara, you're nodding?
Yeah, I'm nodding because one of the notes that I made is that we fall into the trap of a dichotomy or a duality. We start, you know, talking about, you know, the men and women and, you know, good bodies and not good bodies. So I think we have to be really careful as we discuss, you know, equality and social justice causes, that we want to be sure that, you know, all individuals can support this. It's not really men against women or, you know, the boys against the girls. So I think that's just an important piece that I pulled out of that, that we have, you know, a diverse array of identities from male, female, intersex, genderqueer, and we're all reaching for good social justice causes. And this intersects both the sport and the currency question.
Deborah?
Yeah, thinking about the thing I probably shouldn't say, but is football with the pigskin more popular because the pants are tighter than baseball? My mind just went there, and I thought, well, that's a... I mean, it's certainly true. We do, we engage with people based on lots of things, and there is a reality that there is something around how someone visually presents. What makes the soccer so exciting to me is it's so many different things. It's endurance, it's courage, it's perseverance, and the game, when the awful tragedy of the English, you know, the ending of that game, people were so engaged in that. I mean, that's human drama. And watching the sportsmanship, how the coach handled it, how the people handled it, I mean, to me, that's sport. I don't, when I watch an American football game, not soccer, I don't see much new that I haven't seen before. I enjoy the hype. But I'm not seeing, and I know it all goes into that. I know that there's all kinds of athleticism and challenge and training and all of that. But, I mean, that's a whole question. I'm kind of fascinated that we're stuck a little bit in history when we think about who goes in. You know, why maybe Sally Ride should be on the 20? You know, America's first woman in space. What about, should we have women who are scientists? Should we have women who are in literature? Should we have, are we so stuck? I mean, if we used to do presidents and generals and... we've got all the complexity of how we feel about that. I almost could think of, what if we had a Lady Liberty that visually represented ethnicity in many different ways? Would that be a symbol, or what could be there? What could happen there?
Well, Alan in Pittsford writes to us on the web and says, faces on currency, stay with past presidents, and let's get a woman president soon. That's what Alan says.
I like it.
Now,
but Benjamin Franklin, is not a president. Yeah. Neither was Alexander Hamilton.
A good point.
That's exactly right. And again, if you missed the earlier part of the program where we talked about the fact that in 2020, the Treasury will put a woman's face on the $10 bill, not the $20 bill, as the grassroots movement was aiming for, that the rules have always been, at least since the 1860s, that the face on American currency has to be of someone who is deceased. So not likely to be a president for a long time on the female side, no matter what happens, but we shall see. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, I think it has, I appreciate the education that comes out of conversations like this. We're going to get back to your phone calls in a second. I mentioned earlier this hour that Haley Johnson has been working on specialized media presentations about women's body image, and we've been talking about some of those issues as they relate to the coverage of the Women's World Cup and things like that. What are you working on? Give us an update on what you're working on.
So essentially what I'm doing, it's like a TED Talk-esque style presentation featuring media interludes. I interviewed 15 college-age women from a variety of diverse backgrounds talking about issues like what makes you feel beautiful, what do you like best about yourself, what do you like least about yourself, and just sort of engaging in conversation and having those conversations to ask deeper questions, because I think we do talk about beauty standards all the time, but we don't necessarily engage. We need to engage a little bit more. So we have to recognize those insecurities and how they're encouraged by mainstream society. So that's, I think, the best way to combat them. So right now I have released the project trailer. It is on a Facebook page that I created called Sessions in Self-Love, Busting Body Image Issues. And I've been in contact with some of the Women and Gender Studies programs at area colleges, and that's where I want to present this when it comes together. So I can't wait to see what happens with it, and hopefully I'll be presenting it this fall or this spring.
Share it with us too, I hope.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Let me get back to the phones, and Tim in Pittsford is next. Go ahead, Tim.
Sorry, Evan, I've been away for a little while and for the past 10 minutes, but Jeanette Rankin, I don't know her well, but I'm pretty sure that my two Navy vet grandfathers from World War II would be offended by this. And I'm pretty sure that most of our Jewish friends would be offended by this. I mean, it's great that she wanted peace, but, mm-hmm. I mean, let's really get into it. If you're the first at something, that's wonderful. It doesn't mean you should be on a bill. Mm-hmm. And I'm just guessing that there'd be many people offended by her being on one of our paper bills. Not that, I sent an email before. I don't think that this makes a whole lot of difference. I mean, my kids, I'm bringing up my kids, I hope right, but if it, you know, I'm not pointing to paper money saying, this is what you need to be looking at and these are your leaders. They rarely ever see paper money anyways. And if we're really going to complain about this, I have no problem putting women on the bill. I think they should be, but in all honesty, I don't even know the last time my kids saw a paper bill. Granted, they're little. I don't carry it on me. I think it's been going away more and more over the years. This is a great concept, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I don't know if it's all this important where we, I don't know. I'm sorry, Evan. I'm having trouble today. Sorry.
Okay, no, that's okay. I appreciate the call, Tim. Barbara first, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, Tim, you raise a good point. I mean, it's the importance of vetting who are the individuals that we're selecting, getting a full picture of their history and trying to see, you know, the multiple intersections of ways their work touches others. So, you know, it's a great point. I do think in terms of the monetary thing, you raise the point that children aren't aware, they're not using the money. That's probably a good truth. It circles back to at what point is currency, paper currency, and coins going to become obsolete. And so I would argue then we really need to start looking at plastic and ways we introduce good images of women on our plastic cards. That's another way to kind of get back at this. I do think that it, in a very subtle way, it does influence our children as they grow up, who they see as our leaders. So I do, you know, circle back and want to say that to have women visible is very, very important.
Deborah Hughes, you want to weigh in on that as well?
I absolutely agree. I think symbols are very important. And I think, you know, the discussion about Jeanette Rankin raises some really good questions. But yeah, what would that represent to some people? Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that was interesting to me about the Women on 20s was the look at Jackson. Mm-hmm. Because I think we've kind of moved away from what Jackson represents to some people. you know, for some people, the Battle of New Orleans and some of the things that he did that were significant and important. But for some people, he's downright offensive. He didn't just own slaves. He traded and benefited from that. He was a part of a huge removal of indigenous people from this country. He was notoriously against banks and opposed to currency. Jefferson once said of Jackson, he's one of the most unfit men I know of for the presidency. So I think that that's a great discussion for us to be having. What symbols do we have? What do they represent? And are they moving us along where we want to be as a democracy? Or are they saying to us or to other people in the world that we say one thing, we do another?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with Andrew Jackson, we don't have to reduce everything in the world to easily compartmentalized good, bad. There's plenty that I think Andrew Jackson did and stood for that we ought to be a little bit embarrassed by, to say mm-hmm. the least. Did he have accomplishments or achievements? I'm sure. But that doesn't mean you have to put him on currency. Mm-hmm. You know, there are plenty of places to discuss and debate. There are history books and museums, mm-hmm. et cetera. Let me get back to the phones. John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Oh, thank you. I just want to say that if I were a woman, I would refuse to accept part of a 10. You need to get Jackson off the 20. He was a slave trader as well as a slave holder. He refused to work on a good monetary system that Hamilton had designed, and he doesn't belong in our currency. Mm-hmm. So take the reins and go for it, please. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, John. Deborah, you're at the forefront of this movement here in Rochester. What do you think?
Yeah, 90 years is a lot of time for Jackson. This reminds me a little bit of the debate that we often have, which is, do you settle for something because you can get it, yeah. or do you keep pushing?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should do both. Mm-hmm. We need to take the opportunity, and if we're going to have somebody on the 10, I'd love for it to be Susan B. Anthony because what she represents mm-hmm. for democracy. But we should keep pushing for the mm-hmm. 20 and having this kind of conversation about it.
On Twitter, one of our listeners mentioned, and I probably a fair point, because we've been talking about how so many of us would love to see Andrew Jackson off the 20. Todd, your panel says, your panel would be stunned to know what goes into updating all the machines that take bills and how quickly mm-hmm. it must be done.
Absolutely.
I have no doubt that Todd's right, and Todd, I appreciate that point. So we've been a little flippant about it. But I think what we are saying, though, is, okay, if it's not next month or next year, it's still a value choice that you're going to work towards it. And right now, mm-hmm. there's nothing in the works on our $20 bill, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. So Deborah Hughes with the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House, you're part of this campaign now to put Susan B. Anthony on the 10. Can people follow along? How are you trying to sort of move that forward?
There's a petition on the U.S. Treasury site, and you can go vote. We nominated Susan B. Anthony, not a big surprise. And people should register their opinion and let people know about that. We're actually going to have a town meeting in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood in our carriage house on July 21st, Tuesday, from 5:30 to 6:30, right before the RPO does a community concert in the park there. So people can come, discuss this, bring issues, weigh in, and be a part of that, because we do think that we should be having these discussions about democracy. And I'd love to have a really long list, so we'd have to have a week-long conference. That would be great.
There you go. Some final thoughts, Barbara Lee Savoy?
Yeah, I just want to say that Women on the 20, started by Barbara Howard. That's a great site that you can go to and find additional information. She also has a lot of data on who's voted and what the stratifications are by categories of identity. So you can find out a lot more there, and you can continue to voice your opinion on what are their four finalists, which are Harriet Tubman, Eleanor Roosevelt, Rosa Parks, and Wilma Mankiller. So those are the four that have come out of the Women Out of 20. And then, as I mentioned, Senator Schumer was in Seneca Falls yesterday, and his goal is to run several town meetings where individuals can get in on the conversation and begin to express their point of view. And I totally agree. We shouldn't let Andrew Jackson off the hook. We've got to kind of go at both ends of this. It's an opportunity, and we should ride the wave.
And about 40 seconds, Haley Johnson, we talked about a lot of different issues this hour. Some final thoughts from you.
Sure. One of the quotes that I found from that website that Barbara was talking about was that money does send a message worldwide. So I think that's something to consider.
Yeah. I take the point that Tim and some other callers have raised, saying it's paper currency. I don't think it's going away tomorrow. to Tim's point, I know he doesn't really carry it. His kids don't see it often, but I don't think it's going away tomorrow. Jessica Williams of The Daily Show joked that we should put a woman on the Bitcoin. You know, maybe the future, the e-currency or the digital currencies, the cryptocurrencies, maybe that's where we're going next. But I don't think paper currency is going away tomorrow. And I think it will be interesting to at least see what the Treasury decides to do with this. But ultimately, yeah, I don't think it is radical or overly opinionated of the host of this program to say, woman on part of the 10. I love that. I love John's comment, part of the 10, because Hamilton's going to the back. Not really enough. But a great conversation this hour with Debra Hughes. Always great to have you.
Great to be here, Evan.
From the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House, Barbara Lee Savoy from SUNY Brockport, the director of the Women's and Gender Studies program there. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Evan. Great to be here.
And Haley Johnson, great to see you again, and we'll look forward to more of your work as well. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, short break. Next hour, what do you accept? If you're reading a memoir this summer, what is an okay amount of stretching the truth on the behalf of the author? It starts with the author of Eat, Pray, Love. We'll start there and start the conversation in just a few minutes.